Everything comes to knowledgely and having people to help the producers to go forward and to understand the environment so they can choose by themselves and not being trapped into the poverty cycle where they are always in a need for someone to hand them money or to support them out of charity. It doesn't work.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details.
Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Leah Safar, and this is episode 3 of a 5-part series with Fabricio Andrade from San Coffee in Brazil. And we are talking about the volatility in the coffee supply chain in 2024. Now, in the last episode, we spoke about the volatility in the price of coffee, and we went through the different reasons why coffee can be so volatile. In this episode, we're going to talk about how that price volatility impacts coffee producers. And we touched on that a little in the last episode, but now we want to deep dive into it. So Fabricio, help us understand in a very real way, how does the volatility of the price of coffee impact a coffee producer in their business?
Oh, great. It's really simple to understand, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee is the producer's currency.
Mm-hmm.
And if coffee prices go down, his currency will devaluate, which means the producers will be able to purchase less of resources to cultivate the next crops, and they will be able to purchase less resources to feed and to educate and to have leisure with their own family.
So what happens this year in the harvest, what happens this year in the economy, what happens this year in the sea market and in geopolitics and all of that kind of stuff for a producer has an impact on the quality of the life that they're going to lead next year.
Yeah, yes. And the how much coffee he will get next year to keep his boat afloat. I mean, keeping up with all the expenditures he needs to cover weekly and daily basis.
For those in the industry who, let's say, they're a couple years into being a barista or a coffee roaster, and they don't quite understand the way that coffee is produced, can you help them understand the relationship between buying inputs and what impact that has on the yield of coffee, so that we can start helping them understand what economic effect that has for a producer?
You mean into the inputs the producers need to purchase?
The fertilizers,
So the volatility in both inputs, prices, and also coffee. So it's a really complicated mathematic that the grower needs to be all the time trying to keep up with. So for example, there are times that ourselves here in Brazil, we are able to purchase 1 ton of fertilizer by using 2.2 bags of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times that we need to use 5 or 6 bags of coffee to purchase the same amount of fertilizer, the same fertilizer. And it goes by labor, it goes by diesel, it goes by everything you need to purchase and to invest on to make your cherries viable, to be harvested. There is a parity in how much coffee you need to spend to purchase these inputs, these resources. So this is the most important thing.
Can I stop you there? This is new for me. I just want to make sure I understand it correctly. So are you saying that from last year's harvest, I'm going to do a calculation to figure out how many bags I sold last year that are going to allow me to buy the amount of fertilizer I need for next year?
Yep.
Wow.
Exactly.
So that's a calculation that producers need to understand it's a moving target. So if last year I sold my coffee for $1 a pound, I need to figure out the calculation based on what the fertilizer costs this year, how many bags of coffee it costs me from last year's harvest to be able to buy the fertilizer I need for this year's harvest, for this year's crop.
Exactly.
And that changes every year.
And that changes every year. And in the end, I'm not talking about sophisticated management systems.
Mm.
This kind of reasoning bring the producers to the most important outcome, the bottom line of their business, their production in the end of the cycle, if there is some money left or if it doesn't, for him to reinvest, for him to do maintenance at his house, for him to purchase more or less food. So in the end, everything, these calculations, these risks impact directly into the bottom line of his business, if he'll be able to improve or not in his life, the future.
How, it sounds like it's complicated maths. It sounds like you've done a lot of studying to be able to enable you to be a part of helping producers to do this. How realistic is it that producers have access to be able to understand how to do a lot of this mathematics? And that's no disrespect to anybody. There are a lot of business owners across the supply chain who get into doing this that have no business experience at all across the entire supply chain. This is no disrespect to producers at all by me asking this question. I genuinely am curious. Like, this sounds like there's a lot of complicated maths in understanding this. How many of, like, is it realistic to expect that they all know how to do this?
Oh, it is realistic, but in any business, all the businesses are complicated. There is a statistics here in Brazil from a buddy that works, an organization that works supporting businesses, small businesses, that only one out of five companies or businesses reach the 5th year anniversary. So it's really tough out there. But then we come with this mentality that for this business to be successful, they need to have a good strategy. They need to be differentiating themselves. They need to be efficient. And they need to understand what and how things going on within the supply chain and his own business. And then everything comes out of education, consultancy, and organizations getting closer to these producers to not only teach and coach them, but help them to overcome these challenges that they face ahead and in their daily basis. And that's one thing that Brazil has been doing really well with educating and through SEMAI. There is an organization. It's a service for education in rural areas in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And not only the SEMAI provides courses for tractor drivers, inputs, application, management, speech, many things in financial, personal finance. And many things that bring more clarity into the for the producers and their family to interpret better their more accurately their environment, and then it will allow them to take better decisions within their businesses and life. So everything comes to knowledge, Lee, and having people to help the producers to go forward and to understand their environment so they can choose by themselves and not being trapped into the poverty cycle where they are always in a need for someone to hand them money or to support them out of charity. It doesn't work.
No. Empowerment and knowledge is, in my opinion, that's the best way that we're going to drive the industry forward. There's a lot of gaps. And this price story is, it seems to be the underpinning chokehold of how we can drive this forward. Because if people felt that they would get paid for the effort that they put into producing this commodity and roasting this commodity and brewing this commodity and running the businesses that facilitate all of this stuff, if there was fair payment for that, we would have a thriving industry. But it seems like people are operating businesses that have such razor thin margins that when you add on top of that the external forces that seem to be working against the entire supply chain, whether it's politics, whether it's supply chain logistics, or it's climate change, this all becomes a little bit just too hard.
Yeah. And there is another thing, Lee, that by the risk management perspective, and I believe your grandpa or mother used to tell you that, don't put all your eggs into one basket. And not necessarily we should be incentivizing the producers to produce more coffee.
No.
We need to incentivize the producers to
hedge,
understand business, how it works, and to mitigate the risks producing something else, and not only be relying on only coffee, because then in the end, the producers will be always needing some help whenever coffee goes bad. So that's another thing that sometimes I criticize some policies and projects that are always trying to give to give to producers more in seedlings from leaf rust resistant varietals. And in the end, we are always giving the producers means to produce more coffee. But is it only what the producers need to have a better life? Mm-hmm. Because coffee is only the mean, is only the conveyor, it's only a tool, but coffee is not the ultimate objective. Coffee is a tool to bring people happy, the happiness, to make people prosper in life. Then it's not necessarily to be the only one tool. There can be something else, like other crops, other livestock, or doing something at the city, investing the proceeds of coffee to invest in something else into the city and have a more diversified source of income. That's something really important to take into consideration as well.
There's a lot of producers, a lot of stories that I'm hearing out of Colombia, and Tim Windelbo came on the podcast and spoke about this. The producers in Colombia are pulling up 30% of their crops and planting something else because it just makes sense to hedge against coffee with other crops. It sounds like this is starting to become a more acceptable way to stay in coffee, but also increase the viability of your business, right?
Exactly. And it goes like that for all the businesses, right? If you have a restaurant and there is a dish there that's not selling well and it's not being profitable, are you really going to keep it in your menu, or you take it off?
Or you add mac and cheese, because we know everybody likes mac and cheese. So you make a fancy version of mac and cheese, and then you can keep your thing on the menu just if you have to. But I mean, eventually we've got to get smart as business owners. And, you know, something that I do want to bring up, since we're talking about price volatility, is we haven't spoken much about the C market. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything that a lot of people are saying to me about the price of coffee and the way it's impacting producers, a lot of producers are saying to me, we have to cut out the C market. The C market plays too big a role in the price of coffee. Even though we're buying coffee in the cash market, our base price is still based on the C market, where speculators can get involved and hedges are getting involved to impact the pricing. What are your, do you have any thoughts on the role of the C market and why it's adding to the volatility of the price of coffee?
That's a great point, and I can be wrong and I can change my perspective tomorrow or one year ahead. But at this point, Lee, I see the problems that the speculation to the C market brings to producers' lives. But I don't see a way out of it. It's such important tool to the supply chain to hedge many steps along the way that coffee goes through. And because what happens is the speculators, the investors, they don't take a position where they don't see the fundamentals taking the market. Mm-hmm. I mean, supply and demand. But the thing is that the speculators, once they bring a lot of money into the market at once, or they can take it out at the same speed and pace, it enhances, amplifies the moves of coffee. So coffee price can change.
It happened
two months ago. or more recent, 10% within one day. So it's not something reasonable to understand that it was driven by only fundamentals. No. There was speculators moving really sharply the market. So that's the problem that speculators bring to amplify and to bring sharper moves. But in the end, I don't see a well-functioning market without the C market helping people to mitigate risks. Because at the same point, new C market move can hurt, but can also bring a lot of opportunities to the producers to sell better their copies.
For those of you who are listening who don't quite know what we're talking about, just to simplify it, the C market is an exchange that's based in New York where someone can go in, whether they want to actually take delivery of the coffee or not, they can go and buy a contract of coffee. And it's going to be a contract of coffee that's going to come due in the future. We call this a futures market. So you go into the market, you buy a contract, and you have a couple of different reasons for wanting to participate. If you actually want to take receipt of the coffee itself, you're buying commercial grade coffee, Arabica, you buy the contract and then let it come to the end of the contract and the coffee will show up. That's a very simplified version of that, but there's that scenario. On the other hand, it's also a tool where people can make money without ever touching the coffee. And what you can do is you can go in and you can say, well, the price of coffee is at $1.05 today. And I think that price is going to go up. And I think it's going to go up to $1.30. So I'm going to put $1,000 on that and I'm going to wait for it to go up to $1.30 and I'm going to pull my money out and I'm going to make the difference in that. And those people have no intention of ever touching the coffee. Now, the two reasons that people do that is because either they were, like Fabrizio was saying, they are using that as a way to hedge, to bet against or to not bet against, but to absorb any losses that they might make in the other side of the trade, in the cash market. Or they just may be somebody that's some kid sitting on their laptop thinking, I'm going to play the commodities market and they're going to make some money. All of that money that goes into that market is determining whether the price of coffee is going to go up or not on this futures market. Then in the cash market at Origin, what happens is the people base what they're actually buying and selling the physical coffee for off what the price is on the C market. So if a lot of people are pumping money into the C market, the price is going up. And so all of that liquidity that's going in there is having a positive effect in the cash market. If it goes the other way and people pulling money out of their contracts, it's going to drive the price down. And that's going to have a negative effect in the cash market. Did I explain it properly, Fabrizio?
Yeah, you explained perfectly it. And yeah, but in the end, the physical market, the cash market, also plays a very important role in influencing the C market. So it goes both ways.
How does that happen? Teach me about that.
Yeah, because whenever C market goes up, goes down actually, and then the traders and exporters, they make the calculation that allows them to move the coffee out of certain origin like Brazil.
Right.
And Brazil, the differential in the countryside is, average speaking, not in the port, countryside, ungraded coffee, good cup level grade of coffee with 90 defects. It's usually minus 30. So you convert New York minus 30, multiply it by Brazilian reais exchange rate, and then you come up with a price that you can pay a producer into production area.
Okay.
But then the New York goes down, but the producers are not willing to sell.
Okay.
And then the exporters need to move coffee to Santos Port or to Vitória Port. And the roaster out there need coffee. And the producer, the exporter say, hey, grower, minus 30. No, I'm not going to sell it. And then the exporter, because he needs to move coffee out, he will need to narrow the differential to make coffee out of Brazil and the growers willing to sell. And then goes this way, it goes minus 30, minus 20, minus 5. It can even go positive. It happened really rarely, but it happens. It happened in the past. But then it's not sustainable because it doesn't fit into the margins of exporters and importers anymore. And then they, to a certain point, they say, but one thing that we need to realize is that there are thousands of people doing it. Mm-hmm. So in the end, at a certain point, there will be someone that will say, oh, I cannot handle it anymore. Plus five or a level New York or minus five is too expensive. It doesn't fit into our margin. We need to stop. And then who is purchasing this coffee needs to start being willing to purchase coffee at a higher price. And then it reflects in New York. New York goes up. The C market goes up and differentials come back to the minus 30 again. So there are both markets influence themselves respectively.
But it's just coffee, right, Fabrizio? Like, why is it so complicated? So in the next episode, folks, we're going to start talking about the cost of production and how that is impacting all of this. Because if there's anything that I'm having a lot of conversations about right now is the disconnect between the cost of production and the sell price of coffee or the buy price of coffee. So join us for the next episode, folks. Peace, love and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on The Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward. Mm-hmm.